And so we have a real problem that is structural and that the cycle needs to be interrupted. So our ideas were to reduce the term limits to 6 years rather than nine, the maximum amount of time that someone could serve, to encourage the board to add two new board members now outside of a typical election, and to undertake an educational campaign that would help to inform the board and the partners about the risk that is presented by this situation, both well, on a number of fronts, but on the front of legal risk, on the front of risk to the business being able to grow because of what Mary Ann spoke about. And also, we talked about having the compensation committee build some metrics, use metrics or establish metrics to build this into the compensation structure of the company to encourage some progress on this front.
Great, thank you.
I wanted to add, we had also looked at a possibility of, because nobody seems to want to give up their board seat and be replaced, of adding two diverse members. Because the nominating committee doesn't have to wait till the annual meeting. They could put them on then, when people will see the value they're adding, and then they'll be on the ballot for the next one. And perhaps that's a way to encourage some people to eventually leave, but if they don't have those people to start. So they could put on people tomorrow, or just about, by just nominating two additional members, and there really doesn't seem to be a downside to them doing that.
Yeah, cool. Let's hear from my group, somebody from my group speak up. There's a lot of rich discussion there.
I'll jump in. We had a really excellent conversation. A lot of the same themes that others have brought up. We talked about the idea of bringing outside board members to expand the board, but then also got concerned because we don't really know how monolithic the thinking is as far as they're all white men, but are some of them more aware of the need for a change, or are they all resistant to it? And we thought if they were more resistant to it, then bringing two outsiders might have a coalition of the internal people that would kind of block the impact. But that would be a potential way to start either way. But the real key is to get people to move up through that organization. And to get people to think about that, we had a lot of discussion about how do you make the business case for it? Because you've got to create awareness for the need to change, depending on how far along that is. So we talked about the cost of turnover. We talked about the potential loss of clients because it was mentioned earlier, that people want to hire people who look like them. And if we don't look like everybody else, given the nature of the work where our role is to swoop into a company and replace the whole management team, turn the company around and then move on again, having those faces coming in all be older white males would create more resistance to that change that might otherwise be there. So we might get less and less business over time. We also talked about kind of Juliet's role and how does she get change to happen? So part of it was an education, but we thought if she could try and create a coalition and perhaps get the outgoing chair, who obviously is supporting her, to maybe help her form a small committee to look at the issue. Just start it off as a study group, if there was a lot of resistance to it, or perhaps make it a real clear diversity and inclusion committee that would look at the whole organization. Because the problem's not just at the board, but it's also down low in the organization. So it's, it's a top down and a bottom up issue, but they're never going to change unless they start making change happen at their hiring practices and really work hard to diversify the workforce. I guess that was kind of the key of things that we talked about that hasn't been pretty well covered. Anybody from our group want to add anything?
Cool. I think there's a fourth group. Want to jump in? Somebody that hasn't, a group that hasn't spoken yet. Maybe Karen, were you, was your team spoken for?
Yep, I was in group three. George Gorman covered us.
Okay. Ingrid, how about your group?
Mike Addis. Great job, Mike.
Okay. All right, so who am I missing? I don't want to call, go down the list. Chris, did your team speak?
Yeah, I was with group three with George.
All right, so did I think we
have three groups.
Oh, okay, all right, cool. So every team spoke. So what I heard was is that there's a lot of pain. I'm sorry, that there's a lot of structural problems. But the structural problems, which is totally, and I'll tell you what happened in a little bit, but I just want to break out some more discussion here. So if you think about what I heard from the three groups is this idea that there's these structural problems and the way they're set up. And I think, Mike, guess you really laid it out nicely, which is, you know, you don't have the diversity in the pool of people from the beginning, and then you lose them at associate, and then they don't make it to principal, and then you just keep going, and so you get the status quo. So there's a structural problem. But I think the key is that how do we get Julie to create the pain so that the board is willing to make the change? Because if the board is all perfectly happy, I mean, even had an example in our group of a board, existing board, that had a conversation like this and decided the pain wasn't there yet, so let's not worry about it. If there's no pain, ain't nobody gonna do anything about it. And that's just the way it is. And I think there's a couple things that I think, let me throw it out actually. So where's the pain? How can we get the board to feel the pain? Because I can tell you that in a macro sense, because we talk to a lot of different companies, in a macro sense saying, yeah, you're not gonna get the customers, everybody's like, yeah, you're right. But then nothing happens, right? So the pain isn't felt. So what do you think?
Jody, I just want to offer that Jerry and I were talking about this and how we thought there was really wholesale change that is needed. Something big has going to happen, and an event like losing a key client because of these issues or something like that, something that just becomes, we didn't think of it in terms of pain, but I think that's a good way to put it. Something has to be big to really cause, you know, like incremental things are not going to be the solution in this case. There's so many embedded problems from top to bottom. It's not just the board, it's the whole, it's the membership of the entire company. It's all the hiring practices. Everything has to be re-examined. And so we are questioning, how could this Julie do anything? Because it's one person on the board is not really going to do it, but
Jody, could I add that the pain shows up when they lose a major client or customer that then affects their partner comp?
Exactly. That's like where and
it
is
hits their
lever.
Wallet. That's the pain.
Yes.
The other thing, Jody, possibly I've seen is peer pressure within the industry. It becomes very public. Like in the financial service industry, Bank of America has been very clear that they are over 52% women, their board's over, I think, 35%. So, and it's a very small community, so I know the other firms, and they're all trying to play catch up because Bank of America is putting pressure on them, as well as FINRA and some others. And then another idea too, you see, especially today, is employees. Younger employees don't just sit and paint, they become activists, which is a challenge for everybody.
And Jody, lastly, I would say you also have the opportunity on a personal level. I think Bab said something that struck me, just the level of personal like attachment people have to being on a board and that kind of being a part of their brand and whatnot. There's an opportunity if you can have maybe another board member from another board who is doing that and saying, hey, what are you doing in this space? Those little nudges are also those personal little pokes that could potentially motivate someone to say, oh, nothing. Actually, we haven't read them saying, hey, we found that this is a problem. I think sometimes when they hear it from an external board member, not in a threat or I'm coming here to be a keynote speaker and tell you what to do, I think people tune that out. But on a personal peer-to-peer, you know, I'll show you my board. It's so great. Let me tell you about how great we are. Kind of a conversation, I think sometimes you might have a little bit of juice to get people to be a little more motivated. But yeah, just thoughts.
What do you think about the fact that, do you think that there's any opportunity, or how might we wake up the other members of the board, I think Adrian started that conversation with asking them to go out, but like even asking them to go out and talk to somebody else, they may be resistant to. How might we address that resistance directly? And if you were on that board as a white male member, and we're actually a little open to it, what would you do as an ally?
Well, Jody, it's Karen. I would say you have to bring the outside in, especially for a consultancy firm, because this is not a public company. You know, there's no scrutiny over them. It's all inside baseball. And so you have to bring the outside in, which I think includes important clients, where you can, other leading firms, about what are they doing. And also, as we've said, as some have said, you know, other people who have perspectives, whether it's Catalyst, an organization like Catalyst about gender, but also, you know, people who are focused on increasing the representation of people of color, whatever it is, you need to bring the outside in. And consultancy firms, because they're not public, they're extremely insular.
Yeah. Anybody want to build on Karen's point?
Yeah, one of the things that I was part of a small consultancy that grew to be pretty good size and was in the tech space. We were in a client advisory board. So there was consistent input on a quarterly basis. And there were some regular participants, but there were also new participants that came in and out. But that to build, assuming that these folks are not necessarily market driven, they're not going to be around very long if they're not market driven. So there's a whole range of reasons why they've got to make some changes. The fight for talent, Brian, who had to drop off on our team, talent is a huge issue. And so the freight train is the light at the front of the freight train is getting bigger and bigger. And but I think that a willingness to pay attention to the outside world is key, assuming that they're open to it. If they're not, then they got a different set of problems.
Who else wants to weigh in here on this? What are the levers?
The thing that I was kind of thinking about too is, as you sit on the board, the challenge you have, do you, and we've talked about this, do you break it or do you build it? You know, because if you break it, you force people into the system, you do that, or do you do kind of a bottom-up, top-down, kind of build it in, staggering and educating and creating that ownership. And I would imagine for the board, that's a challenge. You know, do you take the drastic and break it, or do you try to build it, you know, and make it a marathon instead of a sprint? And both have their pluses and minuses.
No, well, it's not clear that there's, you know, it's not clear how much within the board beyond Julie, how much recognition there is even of the problem, the way the case is written. And, you know, given the insular partnership nature and the election activity, it's not clear how you break it, you know, short of an outside crisis that forces them to, you know, look themselves in the eye relative to it. The one suggestion I made is that if Julie is going to entertain taking the board chair role, she should insist that the next board member selected be a woman, so that she's not alone, either a woman or a minority. That, you know, being the only voice in the room, you know, she's gonna, yeah, chairing a group like this and trying to lead change when you're the only voice is going to be a very, very daunting task.
Maybe the end of your career. So I want to just take the scenario further. And so, and then I'll tell you what happened. well, it's still happening, but I'll tell you where it's at. Because I know you all want to know. So you're Julie, you get the chairmanship and you decide to go for it, right? You're going to create a committee. You're going to make this move. And, you know, the board is resistant. But I want you to imagine that you are on the board and you actually agree with her, but you haven't said anything because there's enormous social capital risk for you to speak up and support her. So you being that person who sees the problem, but aren't sure whether to take the risk to support her and make change in the board. Tell me how you think about that decision and what you do.
I don't understand why Julie would take that job.
That's just the purpose of the exercise.
All the cards are stacked up against her. And if she's doing it because it's a nice place to go, fair enough. But if she's going to accomplish change, she should weigh the ability, the perceived ability to make those changes. Because if she's going to go in and just be one of the group, I don't see her doing it. I've questioned whether she should actually be in that slot.
Let's not challenge the assumption because I'm asking the question for a very particular reason.
One-on-one virtual lunches, start talking offline to people and go, hey, what do you really think about this? Because in my experience, I've found that when everybody's quiet and they're thinking, everybody thinks one way. And when you start talking one-on-one and going, what do you really think about this? I just wanted to hear you.
Yes.
You will hear, I have been amazed when I had one-on-ones with my board, my board colleagues and my peers, what they actually thought, and I didn't think that's what they thought. One-on-ones. Yeah,
her fellow board members are not stupid. They're not stupid. They might not see it as clearly or in the same way, but they're not clueless. I mean, these are successful people. So they're going to see, and I think she needs to build consensus for the direction of where she's going. And I would put my money on Julie.
So Jody's
question.
Hold on a second. My question is actually not on Julie. And I totally agree with everything that everybody's saying.
White guys on the board.
All right, George, go.
So, you know, following up on what Babs just said, you know, either have a private meeting with Julie or with the managing partner and talk about the issues that that you see and you know, get some sense of where other people's heads are at, and then maybe follow up with some other people also and make the rounds until you find somebody who, you know, also sees it the way you do.
So you as the ally would do that?
Right, yes.
My favorite question is, if things keep on going the way they are going and there's no change, what's going to happen? And if the response is, well, we'll probably lose business or we may go out of business, then I've got something to work with. And if the response of other people is, well, we'll just continue the way we're doing for the next, 50 years, there won't be any change, then I know that I've got a different kind of problem.
And then you go with what Jerry said and you say, Julie, you're being an idiot. Just leave. All right, let me tell you what happened. So this is a hybrid case, but I will tell you what happened with one of the organizations that was in this situation. And what happened was is that Julie created a coalition of other women and a few men. And they did the data. They created the business case. And the business case was quite compelling. It showed fundamentally what was going on, and they did it across the organization. So it wasn't just at the board level, even though the problem was at the board level. It showed fundamentally, this came up in my group, that there was this huge difference in generations. So the people coming in versus the board, that they were going to have a much bigger problem. This problem wasn't getting better. This problem was going to get worse. They also started seeing some of the external impacts of it that was going to happen. And miraculously, and I to this day still don't know how it happened, the board shifted. And it was as if they woke up and they are making the changes. It's not easy, it's not painless, it's not, you know, simple or cheap, but they're doing it. And I think in part what's happened is that the larger society, the larger American society has shifted, and so can no longer hide. And I think that was a large pressure point. It wasn't really named, but the data was a huge, huge thing. It was very much similar to, I can't remember who said it. I think it was Jim in our group, talked about the MIT professors to the women. They came together and they did a study back in 99 at MIT. I don't know how many of you know this. It was just talked about in a picture of a scientist. And what they did was the female scientists from across MIT got together and they measured things like the size of their offices, the size of their research labs, the amount of the speed with which they got a promotion, the amount of money they got, all these different things. And across the board, it was a discrepancy by gender. And so the data was so compelling that they could no longer hide from it. So I don't know that it would work in a, and it's not going to work in all cases, but it worked in this case. So I want to open it up for questions in our final minutes
here. Jody, may I ask a quick question about this case?
Yes.
So you were involved, I guess you're a consultant. So when this woman, Julie, got this data, was she doing it through just internal activities? Or, for example, were you the one who provide, as a consulting firm, providing that data to support her contention? Or how did she get that data together? Yeah. I find that oftentimes in these circumstances, it's very hard to get the resources to do a proper accounting. I also have been stunned when I've been involved in diversity efforts at large organizations like Merck, where HR is actually the blocker for any kind of data sharing. And it's incredibly frustrating. So I'm just curious.
And we've had all sorts of experiences. So we've had situations where in this particular case, we got access to the data. We also conducted a survey so that they were willing to share, that they were willing to let us do it. It was absolutely critical though that I think in a couple of groups, they brought in this outside objective idea. You have to do that because in a situation like this organization, the trust is so low that either people won't respond or they won't tell the truth, or they certainly aren't going to say anything that is close to identification because they don't know what the ramifications are. So that idea of bringing in an outside company is absolutely essential if you want people to trust it. If you don't care and you just want to play lip service, which we've seen that too. So for example, we've seen one of the companies that we were working with, we gave them a license to our survey, and then they conducted our survey, but they did no analysis by any demographics. Oh, look, everybody thinks it's great. But you didn't analyze it by, you didn't say, what do the women think? What do the men think? What do the different ethnicity groups think? What longevity of the firm? And it was like, no, we're not going to do that. And so we're like, okay. I mean, they didn't hire us to do the analysis. They just wanted to do the survey so that it looked, they had the patina of, oh, look, we did something, and look what the data says. So we're like, okay. I mean, I don't know. What can you do in that situation, right?
Quick question, Jody.
Yeah.
I am curious. You asked a really good question from the ally, white male ally who sits silent. I guess I'm really, obviously, I'm a card-carrying member of the female group and Black. So I'm not a white male. So I'm curious to know, you know, this group that is not an ally, they are, what is the motivation? I get a sense that maybe money motivated, prestige. I'm just trying to make sure that how I can better prepare myself for when I'm like Babs in that boardroom, like cracking heads, like she was talking about earlier. I want to understand what some of the internal decision-making process is for keeping the status quo, if I could be so. Maybe it's a silly question. I'm just curious.
I'll tell you what we've learned through research and through our own experience, and then I'd love to open up to some of the men in the group. What we've learned, what the research suggests and what we've learned in our own experience is that there's a lot of ego identity. And I think somebody even mentioned it here, that you have this pride of being, it's about power. It's about, and it's also about blame. So there's a piece of this where it's like, I don't want to lose my power. There's a piece of it is that if you're telling me that I got here because of the color of my skin and the sex of my body, then that means maybe I don't have the merit that I thought I had. So now I have to question whether or not I'm good enough. I also have to wonder what's going to happen to all the people after me. There's so many threatening identity and power questions that come to play that people they get into this fearful position and you can't really move from there. So what we try to do is really create an environment where we can talk about this more safely. I'm not saying it's pain-free, it's not. But giving people the space to learn and not, boom, mistake, you're out, is really important to help people through the change management process. That's what we've learned, but I'd love to hear what other people think.
We've got 5 minutes left before we need to stop.
So maybe some of the men in the room, if you'd be willing to speak, what do you think the experience is like for those that aren't stepping into an allyship role? Why?
I think there has to be some external threat that was talked about earlier. And I've wondered what the magnitude of that threat must be. Government's going to shut off contracts. Customers are leaving. We can't retain employees. Some crisis that will provoke change.
Yeah.
This is not a polite discussion anymore. It's so well entrenched in this company that I think it's going to take an enormous impetus to change.
Yeah, the pain will be directly correlated with the height of the denial of the problem.
Yeah.
In order to get the change to happen.
Now, Jody, what do you, just in terms of the facts on this one, with a partnership like this, what do you think motivated the board to flip? You know, the MIT case is easy because, you know, they, you know, Chuck Vest was in charge and, you know, yeah, easy, it wasn't easy, but at least, you know, there was one person who you had to convince, and then he could, you know, he had the stature or the platform to try to do something with. You know, what do you think was going on in this case that actually allowed it to happen? Because I would bet against it.
Yeah, I know. And two things that allowed it to happen. The first thing is, in a couple groups raised this bottom up pressure. So when you have this generational shift, the noise was getting louder and louder. They had a series of a large percentage of senior women leave en masse.
Okay.
Which created an enormous amount of pain. And then there was a lot of noise from lower down in the hierarchy about the fact that those women left. And the noise was getting louder. And so the pain, that was the pain point. That was the crisis that you're talking about, that Jerry's mentioning about the crises for change. They could no longer avoid it.
Okay, so it wasn't just the data. There was another event.
But this had been going on for a while and they weren't addressing it. It was getting more, it was a cancer. Mm-hmm. And it was getting bigger. The cancer was growing. And then the data allowed them to objectify the problem in a way that could give them distance from it, if that makes sense. There's the beautiful thing about data is it just tells you the story, and then you can sit there and go, well, that's what people say, that's what people perceive, and you don't actually have to own it. You can blame it on the perception, and it gives this little bit of a safety space that allows you to do something about it. So I think that's what happened here. That's not always the case that happens, Jim, though, I can tell you. Sometimes it's just like, oh, you know, we'll throw everybody down conscious bias training and we're done. Blah, that'll shut everybody up for a while.
I worked with a company where they were in complete denial of the problem. They were very misogynistic and disrespectful to women in the organization from the top down and completely denied it, refused to do anything about it. It was their problem until they got a hostile work environment lawsuit.
Yep.
And the insurance company came in and said, settle this for whatever it takes before it turns into a class action.
Right.
And right. Those of you who are actually named in here who are on the board and also had operating roles have nothing to do with this case. Separate yourself. Don't talk to anybody about this. And that was so jarring that it got them to put a whole bunch of new systems in place and process, and it's made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Let me exercise my role as a timekeeper and say we are out of time, but I do want to thank Jody very much for, number one, writing the case, and number two, moderating a great discussion about the case. So thank you very much, Jody.
Thank you.
This program is going to be on boardoptions.com. Probably by Monday. So if you want to watch it or forward it to other people, you can. We will be meeting in May, and we will have another case. And this case will be a nice follow-up to Jody's case, because it'll be about what is the role of the board in corporate culture change. And so we'll be talking about that next month. Look forward to seeing you then. Take care, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Good night. Thank you for coming.
Good night.